Welcome into a Sunday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking two additions to the Nets coaching staff, or at least one to the coaching staff, one to the scouting department. Then we are going to get into some playoff basketball, talking the round two matchups, and finally a short conversation about some potential free agent targets the Nets may have seen in this year's postseason. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I have moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets. And Josh Bass, he's enjoying the nice weather, but still planning a trip to Aruba because he always plans ahead. Josh, back on the podcast. How's it going, buddy?
I'm confused about the Aruba. What is that?
Aren't you going to Aruba?
Bermuda.
You're going to Bermuda. Wow. What is Bermuda?
I don't know how you confuse those two.
Oh.
Someone does not have a good grasp of the islands in the Bahamas.
No, it's Bermuda, Bahama, and then come on, and then baby mama, and then there's a few more, right?
No Aruba in there.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Okay, now you're going to Bermuda. I'm sorry. Anyways, let's get away from fake news and go back to real news. The Brooklyn Nets hire Pablo Prigioni as an assistant coach. He spent the past week, this being last week, and I think a little bit of the week before, with the Nets coaching staff, kind of learning how they operate. But he already had some familiarity because he worked under head coach Kenny Atkinson for a couple of years with the European basketball through European basketball and through the Basketball Without Borders program. So pretty cool to see. I'm a big fan of Pablo Pringles. He was on the best Knicks team of my lifetime, or at least the best Knicks team I remember in 2013 as like this guy who like kind of showed up to the NBA washed up. Like he was already 34, I think, when he came to the league, or maybe a little bit.
I think he was older. I think he might have been like 37.
Really? Okay, maybe my timeline's off. Either way, mid to late 30s when he comes into the NBA, and I like they signed this guy with Jason Kidd already as kind of the primary backup point guard on that team. He was actually, I think Kidd might have started for part of that year. And I was totally like flummoxed by what the Knicks were doing and just making a team of all like basically senior citizens. And Prigioni shocked me and was actually like a really solid contributor and then somehow managed to like stick in the NBA for three seasons after that, playing for the Rockets, playing for the Clippers, and being a really just intelligent player and making up for any athletic deficit he had. And to me, those are the types of guys I look at to coach, because you always get like these people like screaming out like, oh, who's gonna hire like a Kobe as a head coach? But like, to me, the guys who can really improve players are the ones who didn't necessarily start off with that talent advantage. And obviously, like, I'm not saying that's like Kobe, because he clearly like understands the game, and I know I'm going off on a tangent now, but I just feel like someone like Prigioni is like perfect for player development, and the Nets really need that at the guard spot.
No, definitely. And I'm not sure if him and Tiago Splitter are going to be coaches or scouts or what the exact role is. But yeah, I think Prigioni is a good addition to the coaching staff. Definitely a wily player in his day. And I would have liked to see what like 25-year-old Prigioni looked like in the NBA, because I just can't imagine him having any different of a game than he had once he came into the NBA. As like that wily vet guy who's always just trying to sneak behind the player for steals on the inbounds, just spotting up from three. I don't ever see him having any athleticism. He's like I feel like he was born out of the womb and just was like 34.
Yeah, no, it's hard to even like, I should have looked it up. I can't even really imagine what he looked like. I guess you could flash back to, I'm pretty sure he was on the 2004 Argentina team. So maybe if you want to look that up, you could see what he was like in his prime. I know he was, I was kind of reading about him. Brian Lewis wrote of the New York Post, wrote a nice article about him coming to the Nets, and to mention that he was the MVP of the Spanish league that he was in 2006. So obviously he had quite a successful prime. And then you spoiled it. Tiago Splitter also being brought on as a pro scout / developmental coach. Splitter, obviously a pretty effective role guy on those early 2010s Spurs teams. Got traded to Atlanta, had some hip issues, never really was the same after that. Nothing was the same.
He fell out of the league pretty quickly, because yeah. I think like 2 years ago he had just signed that big deal with Atlanta, And I guess like he just couldn't get on the court at all for them, and obviously degenerative hip condition
right.
that he has. But he was a pretty good player as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. So it's kind of sucks to see full cliff back. I think of another guy like Festus Ezeli, who's a really good role player for the Warriors, signed that contract with Portland, just never played the last 2 years.
Yeah, you know, I totally forgot Festus Ezeli existed. Yeah, that's kind of a shock. That he just died down because like everyone was saying like, oh, like now like the Warriors, like not that like he was going to be like a star on their team, but he looked like a really nice complimentary piece in that five spot. And now he's just, you said it, he's just done. Yeah, but for Splitter, I mean, obviously the good news is he kind of bounced back and already his intelligence as a player was valued. And I know Splitter, obviously not necessarily a guy who was like super famous in the NBA or like ever had like one great season, but I really like just trust anyone who came from that Popovich pool, like even from a player perspective. And I think it was really indicative of his value that Mike Budenholzer, who was an assistant coach, I think in his early seasons there, and then went on to Atlanta, valued him enough to make that big trade and convinced Atlanta to make a big offer for him. And I think that's it kind of implies that he was a really intelligent guy and they really valued the mental aspects of his game. So I'm kind of happy with both of those guys. And it'll be interesting to see what impact, if any, he has on Jared Allen's game next year, because as we both know, that's kind of the Nets' prized possession in terms of young bigs.
Yeah. Did you know that Tiago Splitter's dad is Jewish?
I did not know that.
For Wikipedia.
Wow. Do you think we could use that as an in to get him on the podcast?
I assume so. Yeah. I
don't see why not. We'll split a bagel, some schmear. Yeah.
A bagel and schmear.
Yeah, he'd love it. We'll have a schwitz in the sauna. Though. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now.
No, yeah, just going back to these scouts, though. And, like, I feel like assistant coaches and scouts coming directly from being a player, you never know how it's going to translate. But I think both these guys, the career they've had, and considered more cerebral players, definitely bodes somewhat well for their chances of being effective. And who knows the bottom line impact to wins and losses, but it's good to have helpful, talented people that really – want your younger players to develop and just around.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is, at least as far as we know, and Brian Lewis put this in his article, there aren't going to be any Nets assistant coaches leaving. So, and I don't know, I'm pretty sure there aren't, but I'm not sure if there are any official rules in the NBA in terms of the number of guys you can have on your staff. But to me, it's a little bit reminiscent of kind of the revolution that's going on in college football now with all these teams hiring like ex-head coaches as offensive and defensive analysts. And it just another means of stockpiling assets and kind of emblematic of what's going on in kind of every facet of talent acquisition across the NBA where teams are looking for an edge wherever they can get it. So I kind of like the idea that the Nets are in on that arms race, for lack of a better term. And obviously these guys are both first timers. Like, who knows how good they are, but clearly both considered very intelligent and valued for that. All right, that's going to wrap up this initial segment of the Locked On Nets podcast. Next, we are going to be getting into the NBA playoffs. All that and more next on Locked On Nets. Welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. Gavin Shaw, happy to have my partner in crime, Josh Bass, back on the pod. Josh, you've been traveling a lot recently, and I think that's, at least to me, like the coolest aspect of your job. And you got to go to Georgia, you got to go to Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland's in Ohio. I know I'm just throwing you on the spot here, but any like big takeaways from your trip? I always find it interesting when people get to see more of the United States. I know this isn't directly basketball related, but I'm just curious.
I think my biggest takeaway, and this, I don't know why this like came to me and why I noticed this while I was traveling, but just the delis and the bodegas that we have in New York City are just, they always come in handy so much. And just the ability to have that convenience, it's something that I miss when I go to these places and you have to drive everywhere. And obviously, me and you being city kids our whole life, it's driving's not our forte, and it certainly isn't yours. But
no,
I don't know. I feel like just having that like classic New York City bodega is it's so underappreciated.
Now I'm with you. I got a little bodegas. Right. I got a little bit of that in college, but like at the same time, like when you're on like a college campus, like those things exist, and you just like give like campus money, and like you can get like whatever you want. Do you remember? I think it was like a year ago where there was like this like company, or there was like this article about like have a bodega like in your house, and it was just like a little like mini fridge with just like water bottles and like candy bars in it, and they were like advertising it as like an in-home bodega, and people just like flipped out and lost their minds.
Just like a mini bar, basically.
It was a mini bar, but like they were calling it like an at-home bodega, and like the bodega boys, oh, I remember, were very angry.
These Miro bodega boys would be pissed.
Yeah, it was like a very it was like the like physical embodiment of gentrification. So I didn't love it, but
yeah, some people say that you're the physical embodiment of gentrification.
that's a great basketball nickname. If you had to give that to one NBA player, who would it be? I think maybe Kevin Love, I think, would be a favorite in my mind. But I mean, Jonas Jerebko is also up there.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like European people are a little maybe they're not too different. I don't know. Yeah, like a Lauri Markkanen maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, that was a good tangent. All right. Anyways, NBA playoffs. All right. So the second round is set. We are two games in, Houston and Golden State, cruising in their first games. Josh, my first question to you on round two of the NBA playoffs: do Golden State and Houston lose more than one game combined between the two of them?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because I think Davis is going to be able to get one game by himself, especially. If the Warriors keep winning, I don't think they'll bring Steph back until they lose a game, and I think Davis is going to have one in the next three at least, where he can just like go Super Saiyan and give them the win.
Super Saiyan?
Super Saiyan.
Super Saiyan.
He's going to go like Kamehameha. And,
yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. you haven't been keeping up with Dragon Ball Super.
I'm more of a Street Fighter guy.
Than yeah, I knew you were a big Naruto head back in the day.
But... You mean Naruto?
Oh, no, kidding. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, no, next time there's Josh, like, it was last summer or two summers ago, premiered the new Dragon Ball Z Super movie in Times Square, and they're doing another one this summer, and I'm going to take you with me, and we're going to educate you.
I think I'm traveling that day.
No, you're going to have to leave your little bubble, your cocoon.
Oh, my God. That you live in. But Gobert also, on the Utah and Houston front, I feel like the combination of him and Mitchell, if those two guys can sync up, they can just get a game, because Utah is a really good team. I mean, they just beat Oklahoma City, who's not like the most structured team, but Russ did have a few games where he just went off and they still were able to get the win. So I don't know. I feel like Utah and New Orleans would each be able to get a game, probably. A gentleman sweep, or as the starters called a douchebag sweep, which is it can't be a douchebag sweep, because that's when you let the one team win the first game and then you just win the next four.
Mm. That is a douchebag sweep. What was I going to say? I don't know. Let me know. Maybe this is wrong, but I think in my mind it would have been interesting if you flipped the matchups, because I kind of think New Orleans matches up better with Houston and Utah matches up better with Golden State, having beaten them by 30 points and 40 points this year. And I know the second game, it was like when Golden State was like in their we don't really care mode. But I don't know. Utah, like, clearly there's like something defensively, and like I think a lot of that's dependent on Curry not being there, because we saw it last year where Curry could kind of just single-handedly play Golden State off the floor. But I think they found some stuff that really did give Golden State trouble and that could really bother them defensively. And then New Orleans, I don't know, it just seems like Golden State figured out ways to nullify Anthony Davis by putting really weird lineups against them and weird matchups and just using kind of four men. And it's interesting because like they use the same type of guys to guard Davis and Drew Holiday, and both of them worked really well. Davis, who was probably outside of LeBron James, the best player in the league in the first round of the postseason, was kind of held in check by Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala. And they use that same combination, just switching them back and forth on Holiday, and Holiday, who's been superb, just absolutely couldn't really get anything going. So I think not having that guy on Houston necessarily, unless they wanted to throw like Mbah Moute at him, but I don't think he's tall enough. I think that makes the series a little bit easier for Houston. But let me know what you think on
also,
that.
Also, I think, yeah, if Houston and New Orleans were to match up, I feel like it could be interesting, because Rondo can – obviously he's really limited by his size, but he can match up with Chris Paul. Mm. And Holiday is as good a match as you're going to have for Harden.
Yeah.
So like right now on the Warriors, it's tough because they're – like. Obviously, they have KD, and it's a luxury having him, but he's a top three player in the league and one of the best players of all time. At like a 6'9 forward, it's really hard to guard that. And really, I think New Orleans doesn't have anyone on their roster that can do a credible job. I mean, Davis, but you don't really want to waste all of his energy chasing KD around. And I don't know, Utah, I feel like they could do – I don't know. I don't think they did a bad job on Houston today. It's just that they're so talented and their system works so well that it's tough for Gobert to also defend like 35 feet – or not even 35, but 30 feet out of the perimeter when he's really just not used to doing that. And no one is his size.
Yeah, and I think – I don't know. I think in my mind, like, that series is a little bit more likely to get interesting than New Orleans. And that's kind of counterintuitive to normally – to how I usually think about the NBA playoffs, who's normally if I'm picking an upset or a contentious series for a lower seed, I'll pick the one that has the transcendent talent, and that's – that's New Orleans between the two, though Donovan Mitchell seems like he's heading that direction. But I think Utah was just kind of physically and emotionally exhausted from that Oklahoma City series. And I think it's kind of, even though OKC didn't really play that well down the stretch of that series, it's a load to handle Russ night in and night out. And Donovan Mitchell, as incredible as he's been, it's just so much to ask of a rookie. And then you take Ricky Rubio out of the equation, and they were just really depleted, and they had to start Royce O'Neal against what was far and away the best team in the NBA in the regular season. So I think if Rubio can make it back by game three, they could potentially win a game or two at home. And maybe it still only ends up going five. But if you ask me which one was more likely to go six, I'd say that one. As for Curry, I mean, they're saying as of now he's going to be back next game. Maybe you're right. And, like, obviously Golden State largely has a tendency more towards being conservative with guys coming back. But I don't know. It'll be fascinating. All right, I think we should move on. The series that most interests me in the second round is Cleveland-Toronto, and I just kind of wonder if Cleveland has anything left, because it seems like LeBron put out an NBA Finals level of effort, and clearly they needed every single inch of it to beat the Pacers. And then the flip side of that to me is this is like the best Raptors team ever, and this is the worst Cleveland team of LeBron's second act, and it's not even close, but LeBron just seems to have their number, so it doesn't even matter if Cleveland spent. Like, I tend to favor Toronto, but what do you think?
It's funny that you say that you're most excited for this series, because I actually think this is the least interesting series far and away, because obviously you have LeBron. He's such a pleasure to watch, but the rest of the Cavs are just so abysmal, and it's just painful watching them for a seven-game series if it goes that far. And Toronto, I mean, they're obviously a really good team, and they have a very fun bench, but to me, they're so boring because it's basically the same skeleton of the roster they've had the last 4 years, and they don't have a transcendent player like a LeBron or a James Harden that's really elevating them. So, I mean, there's only so many times I can just watch DeRozan just get into the lane and take his like floaters, and Valanciunas doing his thing. And I don't know, I'm just like kind of like numb to watching Toronto and the Cavs. I mean, LeBron's obviously great. I'm going to enjoy watching him, but I don't know. I feel like this matchup's happened so many times before, and there obviously is intrigue that Toronto probably is the pretty good favorite to win, but I don't know. It's just not doing it for me like the others are.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like, to me, like the human theater element of it is kind of interesting, how like the Toronto guys, and I think you're right. Like, I think in general, like, I mean, Toronto, even though they were like legitimately really, really good in the regular season, like their candidacy as a finals contender, not necessarily to make the finals, because I still think that's very feasible, but like to have any competitive chance in it. And I know not that many people are saying that, but it seems to be like the implication with how people talk about them at times. It's kind of overblown. Like, I know, like, I give them credit for like not going to seven against Washington, but I didn't see anything in that first round series that really convinced me this team is so dramatically different than previous iterations. But I just like the idea that like LeBron, even with all the chips down, is still kind of in that team and that city's head. And I wonder how much that plays out. And then on the flip side of that, it's like, how much more of this can LeBron do? Like, 15th season, led the NBA in minutes this year, put up 35, 8, and 7 in a seven-game odyssey against that Indiana team. Can he do it again? Did he do that just so they wouldn't lose in the first round? Will he check out if Toronto's dominating the series like he did the last time he was going to leave Cleveland? So I think psychologically that series is very interesting, even though I'm kind of with you, the basketball won't necessarily be that great to watch. All right, we're going to take one more pause on the Locked On Nets podcast, but inspired by Bill Simmons, Josh and I are going to start doing greedy teases, because I think it's just more fun than what we've been doing. So coming up next on the Locked On Nets podcast, I'm going to tell you why Marco Bellinelli's chicken parmesan is tearing apart the Sixers locker room. All right, so we are going to save free agency for another day, because we are approaching our goal of 20 to 25 minutes of mediocre to above mediocre content.
Secure the bag of mediocre content.
That's what we do. That's what we do. All right, so Celtics, Sixers. What do you think of this one? Because obviously the Celtics, a massive talent deficit, but they had that same reality against Milwaukee, and they walked out with that series in a relatively easy Game 7 win. I don't think Brett Brown is Joe Prunty And I think Ben Simmons and Embiid and this entire Sixers team are rolling, and I think it's going to be relatively easy for them. But am I underestimating Brad Stevens?
I mean, I think that Stevens is good enough where they can get a game, but also with Jaylen Brown, I believe he's doubtful for game one. We'll see if he plays after that. And the Celtics are just so intolerable to me that if they even win one game, I'll just be freaking out, especially if it's in like the first, if it's while they're in Philly for the first two. So I really just need the Sixers to destroy them. And I feel like it's coming just because they do have such a huge talent advantage, and Brett Brown's is a solid enough coach where he's not really going to be a detriment, but they have won 19 out of their last 20. They're on fire right now, and I feel like there is going to be a letdown coming, and it happened a little bit against Miami because Ersan and Bellinelli with his chicken parm did have a dip in production, and they were just taking wild threes, and I feel like that's the kind of disciplined defense that, like, a Celtics can force them into bad shots, but I feel like the talent disparity is just too great for Philly not to win this series.
Yeah, and you got to figure Embiid's a lot healthier, and again, that was kind of the incredible thing about that win streak. They did a lot of it without Embiid, and throughout the year when they had their starters in with Simmons and Embiid, that was actually the best five-man unit in the NBA. So having more of that, and as you said, I mean, even though Bellinelli and Ersan not playing great next round, like, just those two in the mix, like, this team, I mean, to me, they're far and away the favorite to come out of the East, and I don't think Boston's going to really be able to do much against them. Like, I'm kind of with you. Like, it wouldn't shock me if, like, Boston, like, upset them in game one or something. But, like, if this series goes more than five, that would be pretty surprising to me.
Right. What do you think of Embiid? Yeah. Like, I feel like he – obviously, he's still a great player, and his talent is just enormous. But I feel like sometimes he's so frustrating to watch because he has so much fluff in his game, especially when he's getting the ball 20 feet away and trying to do his crossovers. And he's not really – like, he doesn't have a good handle at all. Like, obviously, he's huge, but, like, it's not fluid.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of these big guys, like, oh, they just want to show that they can handle, and it's – you should be getting on the block, just doing a power move, quick spin move, as opposed to just, like, pontificating with the ball and taking 10 seconds. I'm just, like, wondering about the next tweet he's going to write.
I love that phrasing. He probably does think about that. But I think it does, like – it does have some advantage. Like, we saw it this year when they played the Nets against – Jared Allen, like, when he gets to, like, face up from, like, 15 feet out, and he gets to build a little bit of momentum coming towards the rim, and just because of the way the Sixers surround their two stars with shooters, you can't necessarily help on that. And you could argue it would have a similar impact on the post, but I think the reason Philly does that is because if you just straight up post him, like, other teams can bring doubles, and to me, that's one of the biggest weaknesses of Embiid's game now. Like, he has some good instincts as a passer, but he hasn't totally developed that yet, and you can still kind of rattle him, and someone like Brad Stevens in particular could do that in such a way that could really disrupt Philly's offense. But by letting him do it from a little bit further out, you're making that much harder to do, and you're making the doubles a lot easier to see. So I guess that'd be the strategy behind it. But in general, if I'm Philly, I think, and you're able to play Embiid more minutes, like, again, like, I just think it's going to be so tough to beat this team, because you have that original five-man unit, but then you also have what you discovered with Embiid out, with just Simmons surrounded by shooters, and you can kind of do what Houston does with Chris Paul and James Harden, and you have those guys on the floor together at times, but if not, one of them is always going to be on the floor, and you're centering your offense around one of those two guys, and to me, that's just, at least in the East, that's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, and also Ilyasova is going to be able to play some at the five when Embiid's out, because Boston really doesn't have, unless they bring in Greg Monroe, Boston doesn't have any, like, true low post scorers, and they don't, like, Horford and Morris and those guys don't really attack the glass that ferociously. I mean, they have Baines also, but he's not going to be posting up and really a threat to kill you inside or off pick and roll. So Ilyasova is going to get a lot of playing time in this series, and he should do really well. And I don't know. I feel like they're just too talented, and they have such a versatile roster that anything Stevens could go to that will work initially, Brown's going to be able to counter. And he's not a dummy, so it should be enough to kind of hold off the Celtics, and I'd say five.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I guess final thought is, if the Celtics had either, like, obviously both Kyrie and Hayward, but even just Kyrie in this series, I think this would have been, like, maybe the most fun series, like, in the whole postseason. Like, these two teams just are, I mean, it seems inevitable that they're going to dominate the East for the next 10 seasons or so, which is depressing to say on a Nets podcast as a Knicks fan, but that just seems like the way things are going. So I think this could be the start of a great rivalry, and it's not going to be a great one, just because obviously Boston is without the services of their two best players, but down the road, I just think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, completely agree. I just love watching Simmons and Embiid play, so it should be a fun series.
Yeah, I know it's sacrilegious to say, but I think I might have mentioned it before on the podcast. I'm so on Philly's bandwagon for the playoffs. They're just so much fun to watch, and especially like, and I also like, I've grown, assuming he's not actually racist, I've grown attached to JJ Redick with all the podcasts he's been doing. He's my favorite, one of my favorite college players ever. So I'd like to see him get back to the NBA Finals. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Shout out to Josh for doing this at 11 o'clock at night on a work night. We will be back later in the
week. Grind never stops, baby. Grind never stops.
Hell no. We are going to be doing there's some internal debate in the Locked On offices. We're either going to be doing player grades or season awards next week. So you'll find out which. Most likely we're going to go to a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. And Brian Lewis, it didn't work out with him last week, so we're going to try and get him on the podcast again, trying to get another special guest. So hopefully that comes through on the Locked On Nets podcast. Until then, be well.